This episode of the Muley Freak Podcast is brought to you by Wilderness Athlete. We have got a coupon code, MF10, that you can use to take 10% right off of your cart price. So when you get online and stock up on all the goodies that you need, fill it up, grab your cart, enter the code MF10, and it'll take 10% straight off, save you a little bit of cash. Also, especially for you listeners, the MuleyFreak.com store, we have dedicated a coupon code for you guys. It's our little way of saying thank you for your support to the podcast. So go to MuleyFreak.com, fill up your cart, grab some hats. We got hats and tees coming down the pipeline. Badass hats and tees coming down the pipeline, I will say that. And a couple of gear items that I can't quite mention yet, so stay tuned for those. But anyway, fill up your cart and enter the code PODCAST15 as your coupon code, and it'll take 15% off of your cart total. And again, save you a little bit of money. Thanks again for support, guys. We appreciate it. You're dialed in to another episode of the Muley Freak Podcast.
And it's tight, dude. The one guy's like, yeah, you can't really, it's pretty hard. Like, you can spot something, but it's, these peaks are really tight. Like, it's really steep.
You can't get over there without losing sight of it.
And it's not like, oh, get a 500-yard shot. It's hard to explain.
Unscripted, real conversations about everything to do with Western big game hunting.
That's the one thing I told Garrett. I'm like, dude, I am not taking a mule deer doe at any cost. It's going to be a freaking corn-fed, field-fed, freaking whitetail that tastes like 10 times better than beef, right? That kind of.
Tips and tactics, opinions, where we've been, where we're going. Here's this week's episode.
We saw that, hey, there was a leftover tag. Let's give it a try. And of course, Eric's like, you give it a try.
Dude.
So once again, it's a leftover tag, but you still have to draw it. So not everyone. So it's just you go in as a second draw. So yeah.
Okay.
I just happened to get it.
Okay.
And I know other people that put in that didn't get it too. So yes, it's a leftover tag, but you still, once again, you still have to draw it. So.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it was tough, dude.
Was it?
Yeah, it was tough.
So tough enough that, I mean, you guys, we obviously decided to send a cameraman with you, right? Or did you do it?
So it was kind of, so we brought Garrett. Okay. Bowen over at Top Priority Hunting, and he was mainly like, hey, yeah, I'll come out, dude. I'm like, hey, you want to come out, try a new place,
yeah,
have fun, make a little extra cash? And he's like, yeah, dude, let's do it. He was kind of in between. He's starting a new job here soon.
Oh, nice.
So he's like, yeah, I got some downtime, let's do it, let's have an adventure. So that was kind of the whole point. Let's just go out, wing it, make an adventure of it, and see how it goes.
I have a hard time thinking he'd ever say no.
Yeah,
like he's down.
He's down, dude. He's down to go. Although he's getting tied down by a woman right now, so
Man.
I don't know how much more he'll do there. Wow. And a new job. Wow. And he got a good job. So,
well, congratulations. Good for him. That's good for him. Yeah. So anyway, it was just you two then.
Just us two.
Okay.
So I did a lot of e-scouting, I guess you'd say.
Okay.
And I talked to a couple people. Now let me tell you how this went. So through some asking, I found a couple people that have hunted it before.
Nice.
And I said, how's your hunt? And they said, well, one guy had shot a whitetail off of a guy that he had basically knocked on the door and said, hey, I see
that. It's a private then,
yeah,
okay.
I see you have some deer out here. I have a tag. And the guy's like, yeah, sure. You know, we got way too many. They tear up my fields. Go ahead and shoot it. Shot a whitetail back.
Nice.
So that was that was one guy I talked to. Another guy I talked to said, don't do it, it sucks.
Oh, okay. Boy.
Another guy I talked to said, it sucks really bad. And another guy I talked to said, it sucks really bad.
Overall, so there, positive feedback.
There was three or four people that said it sucks. I did talk to one person that said that she had a friend that had hunted it in the past and said that he saw like a 170 type buck,
yeah,
but it wasn't worth getting it out where it was at.
Oh, it was in a nasty spot.
So,
supposedly.
Okay. Right. So that was, so between all my asking, that's what I gathered. And
oh man.
I did some, you know, I did I did a lot of, like I said, e-scouting. I went on Onyx and checked it out.
When you're e-scouting, did it look good? So was it one of those areas that was kind of like a sucker hole? You'd be like, oh man, I could see. Or were you even a little disappointed on the e-scouting?
No, I found two different spots where I said to myself, that looks really sucky.
Oh, really?
That could hold a big buck.
Yeah.
It's kind of what I said. And Tyler Okamura, mm-hmm. he's a good little e-scouter, dude. He's really good at getting on Onyx and Google Maps and using those two tools together to kind of form an opinion. And he kind of came up with the same thing. Well, yeah, that looks like it could hold big bucks. Like, yeah. It looks nasty. So yeah. It looks good. So that was kind of the... That was kind of the consensus. So, if anything, you kind of
had a spot in mind of maybe where to start.
Where Onyx came in really big for me was, so I saw that BLM and that state land, and it looked nasty.
Mm-hmm.
But what was nice is I looked up, there's like 5 or 6 units I could hunt, and they all kind of had different stipulations. So, you had to be really careful, and you had to know your stuff. Like, oh, this is... an antler deer only unit, or this is a doe only unit.
Okay.
And it kind of varied by the unit I was hunting. So we had to be constantly careful about where we were at.
Gotcha.
Making sure some were any deer, which means there were like 3 or 4 units that we focused on that were any deer.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's three. And basically any deer means mule deer or whitetail.
Buck or doe.
Buck or doe.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so, yeah, you just had to constantly know where you're at, looking, okay, this is good. But what Onyx helped me with was, there's a ton of walk-in access.
Nice.
So I can go here and I can hunt it. So kind of my first thought, my overall consensus with e-scouting was I want to go to those nasty holes.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hunt those. Right off the bat.
Yeah.
Depending on how that goes, I know that I have walk-in access opportunities. Kind of the lowland. And there was also a lot of state land and BLM on the lowland, too.
Nice. Okay.
So, kind of that ran along the river, and it was just kind of low sage country type, deal. And so, that was going to be my secondary option.
Nice. So, how far in advance were you doing this e-scouting? Were you kind of just like...
3 months.
Really? Okay.
2-3 months. Three, four months. And then once I got closer, through all that time, I was asking people to. And then once we got within the last 2 to 3 weeks, it was getting a little more specific on the maps and whatnot. So, yeah, it was interesting getting ready for it. I had a 10-day window where mm-hmm. my tag was good for. And so, anyway, I kind of picked 4 days that I could go.
Yeah.
And I said, this is what we're going to do. So, four days, and let's see how it goes. Not a lot of time, really, for like 8 units you can hunt. That's a lot of country.
Yeah, a lot of ground to cover, or be able to cover, at least. So
it was a little overwhelming.
You blocked out those 4 days and knew that was kind of your window that you were going to hit it hard. Then what?
Then we went.
Just bounced, huh?
And we bounced. We went after it. So the travel was interesting there. On the way there, it was, good weather and for most of the drive. And then we started getting a little bit closer to where we were going, and then we were just seeing deer all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
All in private fields, and they weren't in the units we were hunting, but we were getting close. And we stopped at this one field, and there were, I kid you not, like 90 to 100 mule deer in the field. And I'm looking and I'm like, what the heck? Like, there are so many bucks in there. Like, there were more bucks than does in that field.
Wow.
It was crazy. And there were like 3 or 4 dandies. Like,
really?
Pretty bucks. Like, good bucks.
Wow.
And then across the highway, there's a field with, I don't know, 60 whitetail and another and another 40 mule deer.
Wow.
So, I mean, at that point, I was like, game on,
Jeez, dude. Yeah, things are looking
all over
up.
The place, which wasn't true.
So, how far away were you from your spot when you were starting to see those deer? I mean, were you still kind of ways out?
Hours, okay. Yeah, hour and a half or so, but it was a long drive.
It's still, it's hard not to get giddy when you're
getting giddy. And yeah, there were deer everywhere. It was insane. And then once we hit that spot, starts snowing. We're like, okay. And then all those bucks, so we were excited because all those bucks had big old ruddy necks. And so mm-hmm. we're like, oh, yeah, everything's going to be rutting, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, we kept driving and we were planning on setting up the jumping jack that night. And we got pretty close to the area where we were going to hunt, like, you know, within 40, 50, 60 miles. Mm-hmm. And it started dumping. But it was like, it started out as a little bit warmer, so it would snow and get wet.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden it went to like 12 degrees.
Really? Oof.
And so there were cars all over the road.
Real iced up then, huh?
Yeah. And so we were, you know, I got the 4Runner pulling a jumping jack, and she was sliding everywhere, just kind of struggling to pull that thing with the amount of ice that was on. And so we ended up just pulling off and staying the first night in a hotel.
Oh, but nice.
Yeah, it was scary driving for that first little bit. But we were excited because it got cold and a lot of snow dump. So we were hoping that, you know, that would kind of finish getting everything all ready and whatnot.
Jumpstart things for you. Yeah. That's good. So after the morning, I guess the night in the hotel, you kind of, you said you still had about 40 miles to go-ish to get to your spot.
About that. And so we woke up the next morning and we took off and we went to that hole, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, it dumped, you know, 6 inches of snow or maybe more. And, you know, we were just pulling, the jumping jack's pretty small and compact, so we were able to pull it up pretty easy. But we got to some, you know, we start climbing, getting into this nasty hole. And we got into some sketchy little spots. So we finally got nervous enough to where we dropped the jumping jack and it got light enough. And we just drove up to this glassing point, and I kid you not, right off the glassing point, it's just like straight drop off cliffs. Mm-hmm. And then it's this big bottom basin, and then it's just hundreds of these like jagged knolls.
Jeez, man.
So it's not like high country, you know, that you think of, like above tree line high country type stuff. It was still kind of low country, but it was just jagged low country.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, within 20 minutes, I spot a mule deer back.
Nice.
Just nice 25-inch 3x4. We get all excited. And then we're like, okay, how are we going to get over to him? And then fog hits.
Oh, man.
So, it was like,
you had just enough time to see him, and then...
Yeah, and there were other hunters, but we had the angle where we could see this buck. We knew no one else saw him.
Yeah.
But this fog hit, and it was so thick. Like, you just couldn't see.
Was the fog kind of up where you guys were, and you thought it might be clear down lower, or were you even thinking that?
No, it kind of rolled. It rolled up right in our faces, and then within seconds, like, you couldn't see anywhere.
Jeez.
And then kind of, you know, we're like, well, this really sucks bad, you know? And we're like, oh, what are we going to do? So we tried, you know, going to some, you know, we tried going like 20 miles to the east or wherever it was.
Just trying to get out of it.
Just trying to figure out a way around it. And, dude, we couldn't get out of it. Like, really? You would get to places that were up high, but you'd look down and it's just
thick
fog. You can't see anything.
Wow.
And so that was, you know, that wasn't very fun. That was frustrating. And so, that was just a big bummer. But it was, and what's crazy is just, it was so thick that, I don't know, it's hard to explain. But I've never seen fog like that before.
Yeah.
That wouldn't give. We're like, oh, well, we'll just, you know, take a quick nap, get some lunch, and it'll be gone. Dude, 3-4 hours went by, and it was just like that for miles. I mean, you could see way out there, and it was just
covered everything.
The wall.
I mean, at that point, you had no other option. Just to wait it out,
right? Or to change areas. So, and try to go lower and just completely change units.
Buck, yeah,
yeah. And we just dropped you know, camp kind of. Yeah. So we're like, oh, well, this really, and like I said, we drove around kind of all that day trying to, so we're like, well, let's go. This isn't going to clear up. So there's, you know, we came all this way. This is where we wanted to go. We were so excited, and it was bad. So we decided to get out, try a completely different unit. And that first evening, and we went out, we went to some low country, and I just got on Onyx, and one of the spots I saw was, there was like this private land that did an L shape.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side, so then inside that L, if you look at an L, that whole inside of the L was state land. And then past, there's like just a squiggle of a road that went into the state. And then kind of everything around it was private once again. And then the other side of that BLM or state land was all private again. So we're like, oh, that looks like that's just a pretty nice good little chunk.
Sliver, yeah.
So we get over there and it was just perfect. Like we got up on this, there were kind of some cliffs and we sat on those cliffs and we just glassed this open bottom and, sure enough, whitetail comes out.
Really?
Like, oh, that's cool, you know? It was like this 2x2 with a drop time. Just little, but it was little, like a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
Just, but it's cool, you know? We got excited. We were like, sweet. You know, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go from 7 hours of hunting the fog, and then you go change in the, right when you get there, you're seeing animals.
Yeah.
So it was like, ah, sweet, you know? And at this point, I still wanted a big mule deer buck. Like, that was why I went here.
Yeah.
That was my goal, right? So, next thing I know, this, what would you call it? I guess a 7-point, no, 3, 4, and 5, I don't know, 8 or 9-point whitetail comes out, steps out.
Yeah.
Bigger, right? But still small.
Yeah.
So, it's like, it had a lot of tines, you know, being an 8 or 9-point.
Yeah.
But it was just young, right?
Yeah.
So maybe a 2 or maybe 3-year-old.
Yeah.
And he was just really like small. And he had no width to him. Yeah. He was just skinny. And I was like, oh, man, that's kind of cool. And so I was like, man, what do I do here? And me and Garrett were just looking at each other. And Garrett's like, dude, I'd shoot that.
I'd smoke that. That's cool.
And I'm just like, it's the first evening.
Yeah.
I was like, gosh, dang it. What do I do? I was like, I don't know what to do. And so I just, you know, I was looking and looking, and I'm like.
So he was reachable then. I mean, he would have been.
Well, yeah, at that point, he was like 700. And so we got, you know, we just watched him. We're like, this is cool. Let's wait for a bigger buck to come out.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he's at 350 yards.
Oh, gosh,
and I'm
dude.
Like, well, let's just get to this. Well, he's probably at like 450. And I'm like, if we get to that one, he'll be 350. And then we can think a little clear.
Yeah.
And so we get over to this knoll, and then all of a sudden, like, we see, like, these vehicles come all around us and surround us. We're like, what the heck? Like, within, like, the 30 seconds, we got to the next knoll.
Really?
And all Wyoming hunters, they all had Wyoming plates. You could tell they were locals. And, you know, we were just glassing them up, and we're like, wow, that was fast. Still, we got this buck. Like, they're not even close. They're not ready. Like, you know. We were in position. Garrett's like, well, you should probably make a decision here, bud. I'm like, well, as tempting as it is, we're going to take the pass on. So we let him walk. And we saw some other white-tailed does come out that night. And no other hunters got in there and did anything.
Oh,
we
really?
We heard some shooting within kind of the river bottom. But
yeah.
But yeah, that's about it. So
no kidding.
Next morning, we're like, okay, so we saw that 3x4 buck go across these big, like, he was on top and over, like, two canyons over.
Okay.
This was the mule deer buck we saw the first morning. So All we're right. like, let's get on the other side of that and see if we can glass him up.
Yeah.
And so we went around and... The where we were at before was fogged in again, but the other side was finally clear. So
nice.
We went through, saw some coyotes. I took a shot, missed. That was kind of fun, you know. And we glassed and we saw a 2-point and a spike like 1,500 yards away. And we're like, you know. And we glassed all day. We glassed that thing all day. Wow. And it was just like, we didn't pull anything up. So we're like, that night, let's go back to where we were. And it kind of cleared up.
Yeah.
Like it would get fogged in super thick and let go. Yeah. Get fogged in. So we saw a deer in the bottom. We changed and went back to where we were the first morning.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, glassed in there. And Garrett's like, I see a buck. I'm like, you sure, dude? I don't see it anywhere. We saw a coyote and I was going to shoot that. But then he started screaming buck. So I was like, dude, I don't see a deer anywhere. Oh, right there. I'm pretty sure it's a buck. That's a buck. Oh, so I'm like, well, you know, we haven't really hiked too much. Let's go on a little hike. And this dude, this was straight down in this nasty, like, so we, I was like, all right, you know, it'll probably be good to get down there and get hiking. So we dropped down and into this freaking steep, just into those roll of knolls.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, it's pretty close to here. So I started going slow. And then we covered a whole bunch of country in that bottom. And we'd just go and we'd see some deer tracks here and there, not a lot.
Yeah.
But a couple here and there. And we bumped a doe right where Garrett thought the buck was.
Really?
I was like, dude, you sure that was a buck? Dude, I'm pretty sure. I'm like, I don't know about that, buddy.
Oh, man.
So we kind of kept going across and we bumped that doe again with nothing else. So it's like,
just a lone doe down there kicking around.
Dude, and
we
glassed down in that country and glassed the whole other side. So we kind of came to a conclusion, and we ran into another group of guys that were locals, and they're like, yeah, we've hunted this our whole life. And he's like, the last 3 years, like, we've seen hardly any bucks here.
Really?
In this area. He's like, yeah, you'll see people will get in those peaks,
mm-hmm.
and every once in a while, they'll kick something good out and they'll shoot it.
Yeah.
And so, and it's tight, dude. The one guy's like, yeah, you can't really, it's pretty hard. Like, you could spot something, but it's, these peaks are really tight. Like, it's really steep.
You can't get over there without losing sight of it.
And it's not like, oh, get a 500-yard shot. It's hard to explain. The only way you're going to get a 500-yard shot is if something's standing right on the top of one of those peaks. And there's hundreds of these rolls, right?
Gotcha.
And so if you spot something within a half a second, it's on the other side, and it's in a roll, and you can't see it.
No idea where it's going.
So it's like, you get up on a roll, and you have like a 100-yard shot if something bursts out.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it's like jumping rabbits, right?
Yeah.
Which is different. Never mule deer hunted like that.
That's interesting. It seems like it would be a spot where they could, you know, hide and get out of pressure pretty easy. I wonder. That's interesting. And what they? Huh.
I mean, it was desolate too. Wow. I don't know what those buggers are eating, but it was like,
it's pretty barren, huh?
It was so barren. I mean, there was sagebrush here and there, but it was also a lot of mud and clay.
Oh,
like lots of it. So it's an interesting land. I haven't hunted anything like it before.
That's crazy.
But yeah, that's kind of your thing, and that's what those guys said. They're like, yeah, I mean, that's how people kill out of those peaks, is they just get in there,
they
and
just
start
so
walking
happen
them.
To you cross jump. Paths.
Yeah,
huh?
You just gotta jump on and pull up and get a shot on it.
Interesting.
And I mean, it made perfect sense. I mean, we were there, and you can glass them. But we would see them just like with that buck the first morning. We saw it for 2 seconds and it was over another peak.
Yeah.
And we saw a couple does, same thing. You saw them for half a second, they're into a peak.
Yeah.
And it's like, geez, this is tough. And I haven't even touched on this yet. Dude, it was so cold there.
Oh, I bet, dude.
Like,
was there?
Like, it was to the point where you wouldn't want to glass outside for more than 2 minutes before you're aching everywhere. And your eyeballs are frozen to the point you can't even move them.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, it was miserable.
And your cheeks hurt. Cheeks are, like, froze from holding them open.
Miserable, dude. And, I mean, it's November, right? So,
oh, yeah.
It's cold anyway, but... And it's freaking windy.
Jeez,
so, you know, you get... I mean, our temperature gauges were showing, like, 5 degrees and 4 degrees. But you got, like, a consistent 30-mile-an-hour wind, 20 to 30-mile-an-hour wind.
Damn.
And then at night, it's like, dude, it's like we had one night where it was like a hurricane.
Jeez,
the walls of the jumping jack were freaking coming and hitting us. It was blowing so freaking hard. Like, it felt like the wheels were lifting up on it.
Oh, man.
That's how bad. It was really bad. Like, if you would have been out in a tent and didn't stake it down.
Yeah.
Yeah, those, you'd have blown away, dude. Yeah. That thing would have been rolling over on top of you.
Jeez, man.
That's how freaking cold this country is. You look at photos, like, on my Instagram that I've posted. Like, I've had people say they get cold, like, just looking at it. Yeah, I don't know. Dude, it looks barren. It looks freezing cold, and that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
It was miserable.
Wow. I mean, at that point, they're not only are they short for food, but now they've got to get somewhere where there's soft water, where they can actually.
I don't know where they get water.
That's crazy, dude.
Yeah, those deer, dude. There's a reason there's not very many deer. There's a reason it's a leftover tag.
Oh, that makes
that's what
sense.
I quickly learned. Like, so here I am. You know, we've talked about 2 days of hunting so far.
Yeah,
and my expectation and the size of deer in my head has slowly got down from, like, you know, you always go in expecting a 200 inch buck, right? And that, like, within once I felt how cold it was, it
just started
that
to go
itself
down.
It started going down.
Oh man.
But
it's
yeah,
a
dude,
mental
it was,
battle hanging in there after that. I mean, it's one thing if you go and you deal with those conditions, but you're at least seeing, you know, sign, and you're seeing bucks here and there, and it looks promising. But when all that adds up and you're not seeing deer, it's tough.
Well, that's the thing, dude. So I feel like this year for me, it's been the theme of mental toughness. So I had my, you know, 15-day elk hunt.
Yeah.
And I was screwing up on bulls. I was missing bulls.
Yeah.
I also wasn't seeing bulls for 3 days at a time, too.
Right, right.
So, but I was, you know, ultimately, I was at least seeing some elk through.
You knew you were in the right spot.
Yeah, I knew I was in a good spot. And, yeah. You know, they weren't bugling. They weren't talking. But I was seeing, you know, I had some close encounters early. Yeah. I screwed up. You know, I missed a couple bulls. So that was, you know, 15 days of hunting. That was hard. Especially since, like, 9 or 10 of those days were by myself.
Yeah.
Maybe 11 of those days were by myself.
Yeah.
And so that was mental toughness. You know, that took a lot of mental strength. And then this was different because, yeah, I had warm weather during the elk hunt too. Good.
Yeah, that's another element.
But that was kind of hard too, because rain and cold would have been nice. It would have got the elk into the rut. Well, this was just opposite. Weather sucked in a different way. It just freaking was so cold.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, on top of not seeing
critters.
Yeah. And it was extreme cold. It's not just like, oh, it's really cold. Yeah. It was extremely cold.
Yeah, dude.
Ugh. So those two things, dude, it was by the second night, like, I'm like, dude, I came all the way. I spent all this money.
You're trying to formulate
a plan that's tough.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it sucked, dude. And so we sat down that second night. We're like, okay. So half the day, even though we could glass part of the day today,
mm-hmm.
there was part of the day we couldn't because of the fog again.
Yeah.
And the first day we couldn't glass at all because of the fog, other than 20 minutes in the morning.
Yeah.
So we're like, when it was good, we're not seeing deer. Even when we're hiking through those peaks, we're not seeing deer. Like, we bumped one doe and we walked this large amount,
yeah.
you know, of area. And so it was just frustrating. So it was just time to make a new plan, right? So, you know, one of those nights. Let me tell you real quick how cold it was. Let me tell you this. So I have this really nice Camp Chef stove. I love the thing. So, you know, we've used it for a couple seasons now. It's freaking, they're awesome. It's called their Summit stove. It's a smaller one.
Yeah.
But it's still bigger, you know. It's not like a little
stove or whatever they call it. Yeah.
And so it's really nice. And so we had it full blast one night outside. And it took us like 25 minutes to warm up the middle of our hot dogs.
Oh, yeah, dude. I don't doubt that.
Dude, that's how freaking cold it was. It took us 25 minutes. And it's just like the flame was full on and the flame was huge, but it was like freaking blowing.
Yeah.
And we tried everything to cover it up, dude. That, and it was like 0 degrees or -5 degrees.
Yeah.
Like, between those two things, dude, we couldn't warm anything up there.
Oh, man.
And then our breath. So we'd have buddy heaters
in the
jumping jacket.
Yeah.
Right? If we didn't have those, we'd die.
Dude. There's no way.
And so between our breath and the buddy heater, you know, the buddy heater would go through a full thing of butane or propane or whatever at night, a full canister. And then we'd wake up and the, you know, it would start to like, you know, get condensation.
Yeah.
And then you'd start to get, oh dude, we freaking had icicles hanging from the top of the jumping jack, because it would stop about 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And it would have 3 or 4 hours of negative freaking 10 degrees, and we'd wake up and it's freaking holy crap. And then we'd turn the jumping jack on in the morning, then it would just drip on
us. Dude, that's funny, man. The only time that I've had icicles on the inside of my tent like that was just because the heater shit the bed. It just quit working.
Oh really?
And same thing, dude. Everybody's breathing at night, you know, everybody's got their all
that's and, when you know
then
it's
you wake
cold.
Up then you wake up, you don't wake up because of an alarm, you wake up because the stuff on the outside starting to thaw, and then it's dripping on your face and it's ice cold, and it's like, oh shit, freezing to death. In fact, that same night it was just like a family bunny hunt. We went up chasing bunnies, and we found some old railroad plates that they'd used to fasten railroad rails to the ties. And I grabbed like 4 or 5 of those plates and stacked them around a fire pit. And I got them nice and hot. And I'm like, hell yeah, dude. Let's take them. I'm like, the heater ain't working. Screw this. I freaking grab them. I'm like, all right, I think I'm going to go to bed here in a minute. So I pull the plates out with gloves, you know, and I set them kind of just leaning them on my chair. And I let them cool down for a bit. And I wrapped those 4 plates in a hoodie after they were like decent. And I stuck them in the bottom of my sleeping bag. It was game over. I was out. it was so warm.
That's sweet.
But dude, yeah, that's a good idea. Having not having a heater, man, that's a different ball game. You know what? So Heater Buddy sells a 10-foot cord or 10-foot hose that screws into the Heater Buddy, and then it goes to a big propane tank.
Really?
So you can run it all night long. But the bad part is those big, I don't know what they call them, 5-gallon propane or 40-pound, 20-pound cans, I guess. If you leave them outside and it's too cold outside, they won't, the gas on the inside won't vaporize, so it won't pressurize into the hose. So you kind of have to have a way to keep the tank somewhat kind of sheltered while it's outside, or just put it inside like a little box or something, I don't know, to keep it warm. So there's a benefit to having, but those, does the Heater Buddy you have 2 canisters?
No.
Oh,
it's got one, but it's the bigger one. They call it the Big Buddy or something like that.
Well, the Big Buddy, you got to put 2 canisters on. It has 2 canisters on each side. Well, you can screw in one on
mine
one.
Mine says Big Buddy. There must be a Giant Buddy.
Maybe. Extra Big Buddy.
Because I have the Big Buddy. It says Big Buddy.
I wonder if mine's a newer one then. I don't
know. Might be a newer one.
But it has canister things on both sides. So you screw in two 1-pound canisters.
Oh, that's nice.
And we ran that thing, and it's never run out during the night, you know, with, you know, 6 or 7 hours worth of sleep. But dude, yeah, I can't imagine having that thing shut off at 3 a.m.
Oh,
dude.
Yeah, dude. Every morning, dude, we'd have to make sure to wake up an hour and a half early, because we weren't moving till that thing was up for 45 minutes.
So, oh man, we might have to invest in a Mealy Freak little camp trailer, a little hard sided camp trailer with a heater.
I know.
We'd talk Eric into that. And be like, hey, go sell a Suunto watch and let's go buy us. But anyway, one of these days maybe we'll have to.
But
we'll
dude, to I'm upgrade. So glad I was in a jumping jack canvas tent, dude, compared to like
a floor tent.
Oh my gosh, that would have been miserable.
Oh
so,
man,
there was a lot of upside to what we had, but
those jumping jacks are legit, man. I mean, not especially being able to throw all your gear on that trailer, and
yeah, that's the nice part. We always throw a couple coolers and usually gear bags or whatever.
Have it secured on top.
Jumping jack doesn't have a lot of room in it. You know, you talk about having those 5-gallon propane tanks or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't have room in a jumping jack.
Yeah. Like, well, they're meant for sleeping. That's it. It's like a place to get out of the shit. But you're right. Having a tank in there would take up too much space.
4Runners don't have a lot of room inside, you know.
Yeah.
So you got to be picky and choosy. But
yeah, I hear you. That's dealing with space, I guess.
But yeah, so it's freaking cold, and it's easy to say, "Oh, you wusses, dude." When you're miserable and cold, and I have warm gear. I have great gear, especially for what they used to have. Like, it's just when it's cold. But well, you're dude, seeing animals.
Yeah, there's no amount of gear that you could take that's going to keep I mean,
when it's that cold,
at a reasonable.
Negative 15 in that wind.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't work like that. But Yeah, I mean, if you, the thing is, if you're seeing an animal or going after an animal and it's that cold, it's doable. But when, like you said, once again, going back to, we're not seeing animals.
You got your adrenaline going, you're hyped up, forming game plans and stuff. It's, you know, yeah. I could see that. But no, when you're just sitting there behind glass, it's tough.
Yep. So we were 2 full days into it. We decided to give the high stuff one more shot.
To see if the fog would give you a break.
We tried to go in those peaks and tried to make it happen. Still nothing. So we're like, screw this.
Yeah.
So we looked over our Onyx maps, looked at all those walk-in accesses, and it's kind of nice. The Onyx shows you exactly where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, ooh, this one looks good. We checked in the walk-in access, and you got to make sure that, you know, because each one has what you can and can't hunt on it.
Yeah.
So we went in and made sure, okay, cool, it's whitetail and mule deer, we're good. So we went in and we're like, this one looks good.
Yeah.
So we go in that third night and we're like, oh, cool, there's mule deer, right? Right in the walk-in access. So we get in there and kind of weasel out. There were a couple people road hunting and stuff, but we just went freaking cut the middle of that place and sat on the edge. And these mule deer does just filing out 1, 2, 3, 4, really? 5, 6, like 12 of them.
Wow.
We're like, okay, dude, you know, it's rut time. Woo.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be sweet. And no buck comes out. We're like, are you kidding me? This is so retarded. And so we're, you know, still looking, glassing around. And so a couple fields over, we're like, hey, there's some whitetail does. Checked on X. Oh, that's another walk-in access. And we started, in that meantime, we started to get surrounded by people. Felt a little bit uncomfortable.
Oh, I bet.
Which is not a big deal. Because
they noticed the does too.
Yeah, they noticed the does. So we backed out, and it's starting to get dark, right?
Yeah.
So we back out. We go to this other walk-in access entrance, and we pull up to the entrance, and Garrett's like, oh, shit. I was like, what? As I say I'm looking over to his side, and there's a freaking big old whitetail buck. Like, I'm talking 25 yards off the road.
Oh, man.
So we're at that entrance, and I'm like, Garrett, what's the rule? He's like, I don't know, dude. But I think it's, you got to be at least 50, 75 yards.
From
the
road or something.
Yeah,
something
just get off of it, you know? So we hurried and shut the door, grabbed the gun, and we start, you know, getting off the road. And it starts taking off. We're like, oh, gosh. And then it stopped. It was really dark.
Yeah.
And I was just like, hey, let's try to get him in the morning.
Yeah.
You know? But he was a good.
Oh, man.
It was a good buck.
That's tough.
So we're like, all right. And so we went into town. And one thing I know about whitetails is once the rut kicks in, like, dude, they move.
They cover some
they
ground.
They freaking cover ground looking for does. But we're like, well, there's does there, because that's how we.
Because you saw the whitetail.
Yeah,
does.
We saw the whitetail does. So we're like, all right. So
he might stick around.
He might stick around, right? So this is the fourth day now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, all right. So fourth and final day. So that morning we go hiking through that walk-in access, and there's kind of river bottom and fields, and so we saw tons of mule deer does again, you know, a couple nice. Small 2 points with them, and like, no, like really small forky 2 points.
Yeah.
And then we see white-tailed does again. We see those and we're like, we watch them for a while, no buck comes out, dude. We couldn't find them. We're like, we kept crossing over the river back and forth, and this walk-in access had like another piece of state that kind of touched it. So we were back and forth, and we're like, gosh, dang it, you know?
Yeah.
So we left, and so in the afternoon, we're like, well, we're going to hunt all day, you know, here. So we went and found another state piece that was surrounded by private. We're like, oh, you know, we'll weasel our way in there. And there was an entrance point that made it nice. We got in there and saw a mule deer buck right off the bat.
Nice.
Just 2 point again. Dude, it's just so frustrating, man. And so we glassed him up. We got a bunch of footage of him. He'll be in the film.
Nice.
And he's just sitting in this little marshy area, just chilling by himself. And, you know, we could have shot him, and I decided to pass. One thing I forgot to mention, that night that I passed on those small whitetail
uh-huh. yeah.
bucks, that night, we noticed in the very far corner of that state piece, we noticed two good whitetail bucks.
Really?
And they had went straight onto that private.
Okay.
So they had walked from the riverbed into the private, and we're like, we're trying to figure out, like, oh, is that, you know, is that state? Did he they cross state?
Yeah,
or,
okay, yeah.
Or are they on state right now? Or, you know, but it was getting dark, and we're like, we didn't want to make a mistake and accidentally shoot one on private, yeah. Obviously. So we're like, ah, crap. So that afternoon, after passing up that 2-point, we went and asked the landowners.
Oh,
for
nice.
Permission.
For where you saw those two white tail. Okay.
Because we saw, and we, yeah, so we went there, asked them, said, hey, can we hunt your land? And they're like, no. We've gave people permission, and unfortunately, we had someone shoot a cow once. And
oh, gosh.
They're like, yeah, we're not giving you permission. I'm like, I promise. See, we
was
won't.
It? Was it a, I was like, was it a redhead? Do you have a red beard? Did he drive a black 4Runner? Oh, crap.
But yeah, we're just
kidding, Eric. We know you don't shoot cows, bro.
Yeah.
You only eat them.
Well,
and milk them.
Milk them. Definitely used to milk them. Used to. Squeeze them nice and good.
Shout out to Eric.
Thanks, Eric. Making us laugh. But, yeah. So
they said no, huh? They put a kibosh on that.
So that afternoon, you know, it was still early in the afternoon before anything was out. We looked at our maps, started walking the line, and we're like, dude, those bucks were definitely on freaking state before they got onto the private. So we got in there early and mapped everything out, right?
Yeah.
So this is the last night. We're like, okay, this 100 yards section right here is all state before it feeds in. You know, we kind of walked it.
Yeah.
And we're like, perfect. You know, we've seen those deer go out of the river bottom into that private piece, but they're
gotcha.
Crossing that state piece.
Yeah.
So we're like, all right, this is where we're going to stake out. Last and final attempt. Custer's last stand. Van Workham's last stand.
Nice.
We're like, I want to kill one of these, you know, whitetail bucks. You know, we started to have fun. Like, the hunt went from miserable, not seeing any animals, freaking cold.
No sleep.
Yeah, no sleep. Seriously, dude. It's so
drained,
cold.
Yeah.
To, all right, we're seeing animals.
Nice.
You know, every time we went to that low country, we had fun.
Yeah.
So we're like, you know what? Yeah, I wanted a big buck. I wanted a big mule deer buck, you know, 200 inch, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it, you know, slowly went down. But we're like, it's more important to have fun and to come home with some meat.
Yeah.
Was my conclusion by the end of this, you know, this.
That's usually the conclusion after anybody kind of drags on like something like that.
But
it's like,
some people are like, I don't want.
No, I hear you.
I don't want anything other than that.
Yeah,
right?
No, I'd be in your same boots. It's like, at that rate.
Yeah.
Taking home something in the cooler.
Something's got to come home in the cooler.
Yep.
And I hadn't any deer tag, right?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So this was the plan. We're going to hug that private. If something hugs or if something crosses that, if buck crosses through and tries to go to that private, we're going to pop them. If the bucks don't come out, I'm shooting a whitetail doe
because
they taste really good.
There you go, dude.
So I kind of had, you know, I had that moral battle, you know, am I going to kill a doe or,
yeah.
And I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to kill a freaking doe. I'm not going to come home empty handed.
There you go.
That was the conclusion. So I'm like, all right, we're going to make this happen. So we hugged that little piece that night and waited and waited. And, you know, pretty early on in the evening, some does came out. We're like, oh yeah, getting excited.
Nice.
So we let them feed on by. More does came in. All right. Let them feed on by.
Nice.
Start to get dark. Start to get a little nervous. And about to where it got to where it's like, okay, this is uncomfortable. It's getting uncomfortably dark.
Yeah.
Two does stepped out.
Oh, gosh.
You know, I let 4 or 6 pass at this point.
Yeah.
And I looked at Garrett and I'm like, just gave a little nod, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Game time. It's game time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's
just enough light to
it was a perfect plan still because those does were going from that state piece.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't on the walk-in access at this point. We'd went back to that state piece that we had went to on the third day or whatever, or second day, I think it was.
Gotcha.
But anyway, we went back to the back to that, and she was crossing. Her and another doe were crossing to go onto that private and stop to eat, take a little bite and let it loose. Nice. About 150 yards, and we went and grabbed her and gutted her, put her hole on my back, and hiked her out of there.
Nice.
So it was, you know, it just kind of came down to, you know, I want some meat.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have gone all the way out on this hunt and not come home with anything.
I was having that same thoughts this year with my archery tag, and in the extended, you're allowed either sex, right?
Right.
So I was kind of thinking that same thing, and like I hunted a few days in the extended, like right before it ended, and I was still kind of having that same thing. I'm like, you know, the way I see it, the biologists in charge of this whole area, they wouldn't make it either sex if it couldn't afford, you know, a few does getting taken home. I mean, let's be honest. So I had made up my mind, you know, it's like if it came down to it, it's funny though, like our whole culture is so bent out of shape sometimes.
Yeah.
About taking a doe, you know, and I get it. I mean, if you, let's say you had gone on that 4-day hunt and you only saw one doe, you'd probably be like, yeah, this area can't afford for me to smoke this one doe that I've seen, only deer that I've seen in 4 days. Probably ought to let her, at that point, I mean, no shortage of does. It was an any sex tag. Yep. So kind of the same thing, you know, it's like it can
there's
afford.
A reason, yeah, there's a reason why it's an any deer. And dude, we were driving, you know, I didn't really mention this, but we were driving around in the mornings and evenings, you know, going back and forth from camp. And dude, we'd see hundreds of deer in
the field. In the fields. Yeah.
So but this is the weird thing. We weren't seeing bucks with them yet.
Yeah.
Which was kind of really discouraging.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'd see tons of deer, mule deer and whitetail, both of them.
Yeah.
We'd see tons. So that, you know, I wasn't worried about.
Yeah. You weren't completely annihilating the population by shooting one doe.
Yeah. No, like you said, there's a reason why they allow that. And
yeah.
So, I needed meat. I shot an elk. I gave half of the elk away to Clint for helping me pack
just
it out.
Just for his charm and good looks.
Yeah. Strictly. And then I'd kill the doe antelope, but my wife and I, dude, my wife loves antelope.
Hoovered
it, huh? Oh, yeah. We'd already ate, you know, a handful of that. We only had a little bit left. So I was like, and the other thing was, I had already made my mind up. I was not going to kill a mule deer doe. I was like,
oh, if you got the choice, heck no.
No, the whole,
I'm saying. Like, you're in a spot where you have the choice between white-tailed doe and a mule deer doe.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna blame you.
No,
nobody.
But once again, it was legal, and I could have if I wanted. Yeah. And there were plenty to choose from. I'm like, I am. That's the one thing I told Garrett. I'm like, dude, I am not taking a mule deer doe at any cost. It's gonna be a freaking corn-fed, field-fed, freaking whitetail that tastes like 10 times better than beef, right? That kind of.
There you go.
And boy, did that hold up.
I don't blame you, dude.
Boy, did that hold up.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so
has Taylor tried it then? She's down for the whitetail, huh?
Well, this is the other thing. So, good friends over at Day 6 Outdoors.
This is the one that you did the recipe, the aging thing.
So, they've
on.
Told me for a couple months before that, prior to that, I'm like, hey, I'm going to go kill possibly a whitetail.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're like, oh, we have this cool aging process, best thing. You know, they're like good chefs. Like serious chefs, actual chefs. And they're like, oh, no, dude, you will never even want to eat a steak at any restaurant. Think of the best restaurant that cooks the best beef steak. You will not want to eat one of those after you have this. I'm like, oh, come on. The weird thing is it's a wet aging. You know, a lot of people dry age.
That's so counterintuitive.
A lot of people dry age. And, you know, I started, you know, doing Instagram stories and updates on this wet aging, and
what are you doing?
I had the most negative comments come back, and they're like, you're gonna ruin it, you don't put meat in water, and you know there's not a lot of water, so what you do is you put the meat in a cooler,
yeah,
put a ton of salt on the meat, and so you put a layer of ice first, then meat, salt,
yeah,
layer of ice, meat, salt, so layer really, of ice, meat, salt, the only, top it off with ice.
The only water would be residue from right. melting ice.
Right.
And, but it's on, but a, it comes, it's on a bed of ice, so it's not, not a bed sitting of ice. In the water.
Well, the other thing is you let it sit for 7 days.
Okay.
And you drain it as it goes.
So it's
but
not,
yeah, yeah, I mean, ice is going to melt from, because there's ice at the top, so it's going to go down.
Yeah.
Not only that, but the meat itself is going to drain, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
the other meat's going to get
like
wet.
Like it would when you were drying aging right. it, though. It's going to do that anyway. So
right. So it's going to get wet, though. That's my point.
Yeah.
Yes, it's going to get wet. Water
but it's,
and
there's
blood's
a difference between
down.
Wet and soaking. You're not yeah, you soaking it in no. standing water.
It's not in standing water.
yeah.
And yeah, you let yeah. it sit for 7 days, but that salt preserves it.
Yeah.
Dude, once again, you got to go look at pictures. We have an article and we'll have a video on it, but with the articles up now, and you can see those aging rings around it. It is the prettiest meat you've ever nice. Seen. And then we've
so
dude,
with the,
they were
with
right.
The, with the salt, was it just regular like granulated yeah, table salt yeah. that you'd get in the 1 pound things?
On a, yeah,
cover it enough to just kind of leave a. I mean, obviously not enough to cover it so you can't see meat in total white, but just yeah. sprinkle it on like you would.
Yeah, put a lot on. Though, I gotcha. You know?
Rub it in.
Rub it. Yeah, okay. That's what I did. I rubbed it in. Put a little more on. And,
okay.
And both sides, and yeah,
really,
so, and that preserves it, makes sure it doesn't, you know, get bad or stinky, or the outside doesn't rot or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But dude, it was the prettiest thing ever, just look wise, and you know, I've learned over the last couple of years, I love to cook, and
yeah,
I love doing trying new recipes. I love trying different meat, you know, aging yeah. processes. But anyway, I loved this. And the taste of it's amazing.
Nice.
They weren't kidding.
So
I would much rather have one of my whitetail steaks than going to Maddox or going to Roost Chris or yeah. whatever and going and getting a beef steak.
Damn, dude. That's
it
awesome.
It is amazing.
So with the... Did you notice a change in flavor and tenderness? Did it tenderize oh, yeah. a little bit just yep. by aging? Okay.
Yep.
Wow.
And definitely taste, dude. It is like... I don't know how... You just gotta... You gotta try it.
Wow.
And for all those people that gave me all that grief, you got to try it.
Yeah.
No hard feelings.
I mean.
No hard feelings. Give it a try. I could see. Yeah. I was nervous.
Yeah.
I was like, this seems a little weird. They're like, no, you're fine.
Yeah.
Like, just relax.
Well, I mean, coming from diehard whitetail guys like that.
Yeah.
You know,
out of Indiana.
It's a reliable source, you know.
So I was very impressed. And, you know, now that my wife and I are enjoying this meat, you know, I look back and. That was a great decision. And you know what? I killed that doe for me. You know, we've had this discussion on the podcast before. People are so worried about what other people are going to say to them on yeah. social media.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Social media is going to, you know, I don't know, dictate decisions out in the field.
Yeah.
As ridiculous as that sounds. But, dude, I didn't even hesitate. Once, you know, once it got dark enough, I'm like, okay, I understand. I don't have a chance at a buck.
Yeah.
I'm going to shoot a doe. And I was freaking happy as a clam coming home with that thing.
I bet.
So it ended up being a great thing, a great opportunity. And ultimately, I could have shot a number of bucks.
Yeah, you could have, yeah. And the only difference would have been a little bit of bone on his head.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, you know, realistically, you weren't making the choice between a doe and a giant. It was a doe and some...
And we saw one giant whitetail.
Yeah.
We even saw a really nice buck within our... We were driving to one of our areas in the morning and a nice 4-point buck, like 160 type buck, crossed right in front of us over the road.
Man.
But anyway, so there were deer there.
Yeah.
And there was definitely opportunity, but it was definitely a leftover, you know, leftover tag.
I
it
gotcha.
Was a tough hunt. It wasn't easy.
Yeah.
So would I spend the time to do that again? No. Not for myself, but I think it would be great.
Like, maybe not with the expectations of getting a big buck.
Right.
With the expectations of saying, hey, there's a meat tag right there.
Yeah, and it would be fun because I could have killed that small buck.
Yeah.
And, you know, that would have been cool.
Yep.
You know, especially, you know, if my wife, for example, if my wife was down to go on a hunt.
Yeah.
That'd be fun to take her on that.
Yeah.
Because I know I could get her on an animal
Yeah.
And to kill an animal. Or if I had a kid.
Yeah.
You know, if I had a 12-year-old, that would be a way fun hunt to go do that.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity in it. And yeah, there's probably a chance at a mature buck, whether it's whitetail or mule deer. You know, there's definitely a smaller chance than possibly hunting other places.
Right. But knowing that going in, you have the ability to kind of plan around it.
Yeah.
That's good.
Nonetheless, it was an adventure.
Yeah.
And it was freaking fun.
That's cool. You know?
And that was the transition. I started out being stressed, like, gosh dang it, we're not seeing anything. It's freaking cold. I was a little depressed. And we transitioned, went to where we knew deer were, and we had opportunities, and it became super fun.
Yeah.
Yep. And so that was kind of the learning curve or learning lesson there. I also learned, you know, how to find deer.
Yeah.
Like, I was really proud of myself for going on Onyx saying, hey, here's a chunk of BLM or a chunk of state land.
Yeah.
You know, and we found bucks there, and there were a couple good whitetail bucks. If I would have been in that same spot that second day or whenever we were there, I could have killed one of those nice whitetail bucks.
Dude, I'll tell you what. So, I mean, I've only hunted big game for 4 seasons and never brought anything home, unfortunately. But the satisfaction that has come from those 4 years of like doing a bunch of e-scouting and looking at the draw odds and looking at success rates and mapping out water sources and looking at topography and all of that stuff coming together, and then you roll in, and then like within a day you're seeing animals, dude, that is so damn satisfying. It's tough to beat, man. It is the only step up for that is bringing the actual animal home.
Yeah.
I mean, to know that you can take those resources and I mean,
well, you earn it.
Yeah.
You work for it.
You feel like, oh man, I'm doing something right. It's a confidence builder, if not anything, when you're when you're first getting there.
Well, I told Garrett this. I was like, I feel just as happy that, you know, we found a spot on the map. We went there.
Yeah.
And we could.
And even better because it was such an undesirable chunk of ground, you know. It's like, dude.
Exactly. Even better that it was on a leftover tag that supposedly everyone told me was crappy.
Yep.
And yet we went there. You know, I could have shot 2 bucks that, you know, that second morning or whatever we went there.
Yep.
And I chose, you know, I passed on them. They were young deer.
Yeah.
But then we saw those bigger bucks that night. And ultimately, if we would have been in that spot and we knew that was, you know, we
could have killed one of those.
We could have killed one of those. So that was satisfying. Yeah. Like you said, just, you know,
it
was almost like you were not, I don't know, outsmarting the,
no, dude, or that's
just learning.
That's a good, that's, you know, a good way to put it. That's a good way to, not, maybe not outsmarting, but thinking like a deer.
Yeah.
Like you're like, okay, I'm starting to figure you guys out, because I can look at a map and be like, no, they're not going to be over there. They might hang out here. Check this slope out.
Yeah.
This has got that. There's
this. Because my thought process on that was, okay, they obviously feel safe in the river bottom because it's so thick.
Yeah.
But they want to get out and feed at night in those fields.
Yeah.
Well, luckily there's this strip, you know, of state where I can legally take an animal.
Yeah.
And they got to go from there to here.
From one to the
other.
And
we knew that there were deer on that state piece. So why wouldn't they try to get to, you know,
food sources?
So we knew that they were on the state at one point, and we knew that they were also on that private land. So that there's got to be a transition, and that's where we hit it. And ultimately, I took a public land doe, whitetail doe, and it was cool.
Yeah.
So awesome. If nothing else, it was for the adventure. It was for the meat. It was for friendship with Garrett, and it was a good time.
Success,
it was damn cold.
I bet.
And it was tough hunting up in that jagged peak country.
Yeah.
You know, part of me says, well, I wonder if I would have stayed 4 days there and hunted way hard and sucked it up and maybe got frostbite. Maybe I could have killed
this and maybe that.
I mean, maybe I could have killed a big buck there.
Yeah.
It would have been miserable until maybe I killed something. Then I would have been stoked.
Yeah. And if the fog hadn't rolled in. And
yeah. And that was,
you know,
that was definitely a factor there, but I thought maybe I stick out those last 2 days and still try to hunt that peak area.
Yeah.
Maybe this, maybe that, but I'm glad I didn't because I stayed in that, you know, lower country, kind of played chess match with public and private land and, you know, deer that know how to play it. And it was fun.
That's cool.
So Ultimately came home with some meat, so.
Shoot, man.
It's good, man.
I need to get me a whitetail tag for next year then, so I can try that aging process.
Dude, it was good.
I gotta put that on the checklist.
Yeah, and there's plenty of opportunity all around the West to go. I mean,
it's not just a Kansas thing anymore, dude.
But it's kind of an expensive doe, you know, yeah. Being an out-of-stater, you know, we're in Utah. Yeah. We don't have whitetail opportunity. Sure, there's a couple here and there, but
yeah.
But yeah, you got to pay out of tag. It's not only do you have to pay out-of-state license, but then you have to pay an out-of-state tag.
Yeah.
Doe tag's probably cheaper, but still, you know. Yeah. So I don't know. If you're up for it for the adventure and you want to get some meat and maybe you can split gas with buddies, it might be worth it. But like I said, you know, would I do it just to go try to kill a buck there?
Yeah.
No. But if I wanted to take like a kid or
introduce
my wife or
someone
close to me into hunting, that'd be a good place. You know, trying to go on a leftover tag somewhere that sells whitetail doe tags or whitetail over the counter would be cool.
But yep. There you go.
Don't go there if you're trophy hunting. There's a lot of other places you can go.
There you go. Well, cool, man. Well, thanks for breaking it down for me. So, as a disclosure, I guess, for the listeners, we recorded this before the film has been edited.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully it'll accompany the film just as fine. But regardless, jump onto YouTube and check out the film. We don't even know what we're going to title it yet, but it's just...
It'll be the one where I kill a white-tailed doe.
It's the one where...
It'll be a thumbnail with a doe on the back of my pack.
It'll be easy to spot.
But, yeah, go check out our YouTube channel. I mean, I have an archery elk hunt that's up that's sweet.
Yeah.
You know, Eric has an archery deer hunt that's awesome. He has a rifle...
His rifle elk that just went
rifle
out.
Elk, rifle white-tailed deer.
Rifle white-tail we're going to record
He was
a podcast
also in
on.
An any deer unit. Somewhere in the West.
Yep.
And then we just put up archery antelope.
Yep.
And so we got a lot of cool films out that we're excited about and that people have seemed to love. So
yes,
check
we
out
do.
Our YouTube channel. We're going to be hitting it hard. Bear Wars is right around the corner.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Coming March, we're going to start editing and kicking them out. There's going to be like, I don't know, anywhere from 7 or 8 to 12 episodes.
Nice.
So just depending on how
Stay
everything
tuned
shakes
for that.
Out.
That'll be good. We'll try to do some podcast companions or what are we going to call these things? We got to come up with a catchy name for the whole series.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, we got to get Tyler on and Eric on and me on for maybe top priority and just talk about all our bear hunts we went on and why we chose to do Bear Wars and
that'd
so
be fun.
On and so forth. It'll be cool.
Yep. Well, anyway, thanks for listening, guys. Subscribe to the podcast. You know, feel free to send us some comments or questions or anything via the Instagram page. Or like I said, or like Aaron said, check out the YouTube channel, subscribe to it, turn on notification bell because, I mean, there's videos coming out all the time. We're going to have more coming up in the future, so stay tuned. Thanks for listening, guys.